Hello, this is Beth Warner. I'm joined for a conversation with the Director of Learning and Technology for the Master of Healthcare Delivery Science Program at Dartmouth College and ECAR Fellow, Joshua Kim. Could you talk a little bit about the ecosystem for non- and for-profit colleges and universities and what you think they can learn from each other?
I think we need to drop the whole for-profit, non-profit label. I don't think it's very productive. I think that we need to see each other as colleagues and work to find areas where we can learn from each other in terms of teaching and learning, course development, technology. Often we don't find ourselves in places where we can share information and share best practices. And I think it's unfortunate that for-profits have been painted in one box, have been put in one box, where I think there's a lot of variation in the for-profit world as in the nonprofit world. And the people I know who work in the for-profit world, they're educators. They're passionate about giving opportunities for people to have higher education who might be excluded. And I think we need to find opportunities to sit at the table with these folks. At the same time, I think the for-profits could benefit from some of the norms of our nonprofits. More openness, more transparency. It would be beneficial to both sides.
How do you see the economic fallout of the last year or two having affected instructional technologies overall? And do you think it's encouraged or discouraged emerging technology and innovation?
I think that's a great question. I think clearly the last couple of years have been difficult and painful for a lot of folks. We know people who've been laid off and have lost their jobs. I also think that the economic difficulties have forced us to think somewhat differently about learning and technology. Some of the things that we're doing now in terms of consuming software as a service, in virtualizing our data centers, I don't think we would have done this as quickly. I think we're looking more at consumer technologies to perhaps replace some of the enterprise technologies we run on campus. I think that's a good thing. So I think we have been pushed to be more innovative. What we want to move towards is at our institutions doing what we do best, which is teaching, learning, and research. And if by taking advantage of software as a service or some consumer technologies and at the same time saving some money, I think that's a good thing.
Do you feel that the for-profits have been more innovative in moving ahead in this area, making more use of learning technologies?
I think the real answer to that is we just don't know. I mean, there's not a lot of visibility into the for-profit world, and there's not a lot of relationships across for-profits and nonprofits. We know that the for-profits are under a lot of pressure in terms of needing to recruit and retain students. So I have to believe that given the pressures of the marketplace, that they have done some real interesting and innovative things in terms of learning outcomes, in terms of looking at the risk of students dropping out. I know that they've done a lot of work with simulations, let's say, for teaching. But I think the real answer is I don't really know. And that's why I really do want to find ways to start this conversation. And I hope that EDUCAUSE is a big part of that. I hope EDUCAUSE can bring these for-profit institutions into the fold in terms of leadership roles, in terms of planning EDUCAUSE events. I think EDUCAUSE has a place to put us at a table together.
So you talk in your blog about not wishing to own software, hardware, books. Brave new world, are you envisioning coming out of this? Do you think there are drawbacks to renting from the cloud instead of owning things? And how do you think this is going to influence how IT is controlled and distributed in higher ed?
Did I say that? I love books, right? We all do. And I think this is what it's about. I do think that there are some things changing. I know that the older I get, and I have two teenage daughters, we have so much stuff. You just accumulate. And the older I get, I want to pare back and have less. So maybe that's a life cycle kind of story. But I have found with things like books that if I'm given a choice now between the physical book, the hardcover, and the digital book, I'll often go with the digital book. I want to be able to get it right away, download it right away. I want to be able to read it on multiple devices. So I know that I have this preference, and I got to believe that if this is something that I want to do, you got to believe that our students and our faculty will want to do the same things also. And that they'll want to have their curriculum, their course readings, their books, their articles on any screen that happens to come to hand. Some of them will want to have paper, but some of them will also want to supplement that paper with reading on mobile devices. We need to be relevant, and we need to do what we can so that the gap between what you can do in consumer technologies and what we do at our institutions does not get so large that we just seem like we're out of step.
How do we begin to reconcile the convenience versus the new business models that are coming with this new technology? Coming out of a library background, it's very important to make sure that we can manage that information into the future for future generations. And that's getting increasingly hard in some cases. Do you see any routes through that from your perspective?
I think you're exactly right. It is really difficult. The existing business models do not support us, say, taking our educational or curricular content and making it mobile. We have all these issues with video. We want to make video digitized and searchable for our students. We want them to be able to mash it up. We want them to grab it on any device. But copyright law stands in our way. And it's not like Amazon is really going to work with us in higher ed to try to get all of our library materials available on multiple devices. So I think we need to recognize how hard it is, but I also think it's our jobs now to work together as institutions, universities, and colleges to try to band together as a single unit to have better negotiating power with these vendors. And I think we need to engage these companies. I think we need to take some risks, right? I mean, that's what we're about. We're trying to do education. We have the angels on our side. So I think we have some running room here to take some risks and to work hard with these companies.
What do you think are some of the big, more important ed tech issues right now? And what's the next big challenge that you're seeing coming at us?
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about this. I think our next big challenge is productivity. I don't think it's a particular technology. I think we've talked and thought a lot about learning, which we should keep doing. But I think we have to bring cost into everything that we do. Higher education is one of those industries where we've invested in technology but have not brought down costs. Now, I don't believe that technology are driving up the cost of higher ed, but I do think that technology will be the enabler for us to decrease costs and to increase productivity. In the future, I think the way that will happen is blended learning. And I think what we'll start to see is the ability to bring more students through our campuses to take better advantage of the very high fixed cost asset of classrooms and labs and use blended learning on a continuum to provide really high quality education, but in ways that bring down the per unit cost. Mm-hmm. So I do think we need to be talking about money.
And do you see that drive towards more productivity, not only for the faculty and staff, but also for students?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I'm not so sure. I mean, when I think about students, I think about my daughters who will be going to school in 2015 and 2017. And the education I want them to have is sitting around a seminar table with a faculty member who's creating knowledge and who's bringing them into that process of creating knowledge in the classes. That's my goal. And what I think we can do is extend that seminar model to other areas that perhaps are excluded from that now. We can use technology to make large lecture classes feel like seminar classes. We can use technology to bring people into post-secondary education who are excluded for time reasons, for money reasons. Mm-hmm. So that is my vision, and I really do want to have the opportunity for more learners to have the opportunities I know that my kids will have in 2015 and 2017.
So looking ahead, 2015 and 2017 and a little bit beyond, how do you see higher ed looking in 5 years, 10 years?
I think the future really is blended learning. A lot of people have talked about this. We've been working towards this now for a lot of years. I think we're at the point now where the technology is at a place where it's not holding us back. I think we're at a place where we have new ways to access that technology, perhaps through cloud services that are more affordable. We're at a point where we know the best pedagogy to work with blended learning, so we can take best advantage of the precious classroom time and offload some of the materials that are not best for the classroom so students can preview materials and preview lectures and review materials and take assessments to figure out where they are, and so the faculty member can focus best on where the learning needs to happen. So I think all the pieces are in place, and what is missing now is we have to be fully convinced. We all have to be fully convinced that this is where we can go, and we can use blended learning again to bring more students through our institutions to bring in some more revenues to both lower tuition costs, hopefully, and also pay for the investments that we need to make blended learning happen. And I think these investments, again, are not really technology or tools, but they're really people. Bringing a team approach to teaching and learning where you combine the faculty member, a learning designer, a librarian, a media specialist, I think that this is the most effective way to do teaching and the way that will get us towards high-quality blended courses and the way that will eventually lower costs.
Does size and scalability make a difference?
That's a great question, and we think about this a lot because the truth is education does not scale very well. Education still is about relationships, relationships between the faculty and the students, between the students and each other. Learning is social. So larger institutions certainly have more challenges in trying to make learning as intimate as possible, as much like the graduate seminar as possible. But I think large institutions have lots of advantages. They have, first, lots of smart people who are working there, right? And that's the key, of lots of smart people. There's also lots of motivation to change. All of us want to have a higher education that is more like our graduate schools and less like large lectures. So we all want to get to the same place. Large institutions also have the scale in terms of the investments they can make in the technologies.
Well, Joshua, thank you very much for your time today. This has been a very interesting conversation.
Thanks. I really enjoyed the discussion.
You can find more EDUCAUSE podcasts by visiting our podcast page at www.educause.edu/podcasts or search for EDUCAUSE on iTunes. EDUCAUSE podcasts are now available to listen to straight from your mobile device. Just visit www.educause.edu/mobile. I'm Jerry Bain. Thanks for listening.